All right, so have you ever been a part of like a big workplace charity drive? You know,
Yeah.
the kind where everyone brings in baked goods and people are signed up for payroll deductions.
Right.
Feels good to give back, right?
It does.
But imagine if the government stepped in and said, like, nope, sorry, some charities are just off limits.
Oh, wow.
That's the kind of situation we're diving into today with Cornelius v. NAACP.
Yeah, this case really digs into that whole idea of free speech, but with a bit of a twist.
Okay.
It's about charitable giving, but within the government itself. So specifically, we're looking at the Combined Federal Campaign, or CFC.
CFC. Okay.
Yeah, and it was designed to make it easier for federal employees to donate to charities.
So what's the problem? Seems
Well,
pretty straightforward, right?
it does, but the CFC had this rule about how organizations could describe themselves in these campaign materials, and they had a 30-word limit.
30 words.
30 words, yeah.
Seems harmless enough.
Seems harmless, right? But it ended up having some pretty big consequences for certain types of groups,
Right.
particularly those that were involved in advocacy.
Advocacy. Okay.
So think political lobbying, legal action, that sort of thing.
Got it.
And they argued that this word limit really hampered their ability to effectively communicate their mission.
Ah, so it's not just about donating the money, it's about the message behind the donation.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then to complicate things even further, President Reagan issued an executive order back in 1982 that essentially barred these advocacy groups from the CFC altogether.
Wow. So like imagine your workplace saying like you can donate to the Red Cross, but not to like the Sierra Club or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so it really sparked this huge debate about whether the government was overstepping its bounds and potentially suppressing certain viewpoints.
Okay, so we've got this clash between charitable giving and free speech.
Right.
What happened next? Did this go to court?
Oh, you bet it did. This case went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
And the central question there was, does excluding these advocacy groups from the CFC
Right.
actually violate their First Amendment rights?
Huge question.
Yeah, it really forced the court to grapple with this concept of a public forum.
Public forum.
Yeah, which is essentially a space where free speech is traditionally protected.
Okay, so give me some examples.
Like parks, street corners, places for open a debate, you know?
Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
So is the CFC a public forum? I mean,
Well,
it's run by the government. It involves a lot of people.
right.
Kind of feels like it should be, right?
That's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
The Supreme Court ultimately decided that the CFC is not a public forum.
Really?
Yeah, they classified it as a non-public forum, which means the government has a lot more leeway to set rules and restrictions.
Wait, hold on. So the government can restrict speech in certain places?
Well,
What about the First Amendment? I thought that protected us everywhere.
it's a bit more nuanced than that. The First Amendment definitely protects our right to free speech, but the level of that protection can vary depending on the context. So, in a public park,
Yeah.
you know, the government can't really tell you what you can and can't say.
Right.
But in a non-public forum like the CFC,
Oh.
they have more authority to set rules as long as those rules are reasonable
Reasonable.
and don't discriminate based on viewpoint.
Okay, so reasonable and viewpoint neutral.
Yeah.
Those seem like pretty important words.
They are.
Can you unpack those a bit more? Like,
Yeah.
what did the court consider reasonable in this case?
So the court looked at a few factors
Okay.
to justify the CFC restrictions. So they argued that limiting participation to certain types of charities helped minimize disruption in the workplace.
Makes sense.
They also emphasized the need for efficiency in fundraising,
Okay.
arguing that a more streamlined process would ultimately benefit more charities.
Nah.
And they stressed the importance of avoiding any appearance of political favoritism.
So the court basically said that the CFC's primary purpose was to support charities efficiently
Right.
and not to be a platform for like every possible opinion or political stance.
Exactly.
Okay, I can see the logic there, but it also feels like a slippery slope.
It does.
Where do we draw the line? Couldn't the government use that same argument to restrict speech in other contexts?
That's a key question, and it's something that the dissenting justices in this case were very concerned about.
Okay.
And we'll dig into their arguments next because they really highlight the potential pitfalls of giving the government too much power to control speech, even in seemingly non-political settings.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
You're right. It does feel like a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And you said the dissenting justices were concerned about that too.
Yeah, very much so.
Let's unpack those dissenting opinions. What were their main concerns?
Well, Justice Blackmun, for example, he argued that excluding these advocacy groups was a clear case of viewpoint discrimination, even if it was dressed up in this neutral language like, you know, efficiency or avoiding disruption.
Right.
Right.
And he pointed out that the CFC, with this payroll deduction system and this widespread participation, actually shared a lot of characteristics with an actual public forum.
So he felt like the majority was kind of downplaying how important the CFC was as like a space for expression and debate.
Exactly. He really believed that by drawing this hard line between charity and advocacy, the court was setting a dangerous precedent that could allow the government to silence dissenting voices in other settings as well.
Okay.
And he was worried this could have like a chilling effect on free speech, particularly for groups that challenge the status quo or advocate for unpopular positions.
That makes sense. I mean, it's like saying, sure, you can donate to a group that provides food to the homeless.
Right.
But you can't support an organization that's actually lobbying for affordable housing policies.
Right, exactly.
Even if both of those are ultimately aimed at addressing the same problem. One gets preferential treatment over the other.
Yeah, and that's where this idea of viewpoint neutrality gets really tricky.
Okay.
Because even if a rule appears neutral on its face, the impact can still be discriminatory.
Yeah.
And in this case, the dissenters argued that excluding groups just because they engage in advocacy inherently favors certain viewpoints over others.
Right.
So, for instance, those who are content with the current system over those who are actually pushing for change.
So the dissenters were essentially saying, look, even if the government claims it's being neutral, the end result is that certain groups are being silenced.
Exactly.
Which is a valid concern.
It is. And it's important to remember that this case wasn't just about the CFC itself. It was about this broader principle of government power and its potential to chill free speech, even in these seemingly non-political contexts.
Right.
So those dissenting opinions, they really serve as a powerful reminder that we need to be vigilant about protecting those First Amendment rights in all sorts of settings.
Not just the CFC.
Not just the CFC, exactly.
Okay, now it seems like Justice Stevens, who also dissented, he had a slightly different focus in his critique.
Yeah, he did. He really zeroed in on the fact that the CFC involved designated contributions.
Designated.
Yeah, meaning that federal employees could choose exactly which charities they wanted to support.
Okay.
And he argued that the government had no legitimate interest in restricting those individual choices, especially since the money was coming directly from the employees' pockets.
So Stevens is basically saying if an employee wants their money to go to a particular cause, even one that involves advocacy, who is the government to stop them?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. He felt that the government's justifications, like minimizing disruption and promoting efficiency, were much weaker when it came to this idea of designated giving.
Okay.
And he really emphasized the individual's right to choose how their own money is spent.
Makes sense.
Especially when it comes to supporting causes that they believe in.
So these dissenting opinions, they really add a whole new layer of complexity to this case.
They do.
It's not just about this legal definition of a public forum.
Right.
It's also about the potential for these seemingly neutral policies to have this discriminatory impact on certain groups.
Exactly.
And the importance of individual choice in supporting the causes that we care about.
Right. And the fact that the Supreme Court didn't just uphold the CFC exclusion outright, but instead sent it back down to the lower courts for further scrutiny really shows that even the majority recognized that potential for misuse and the need for really careful consideration.
Right. So that's the remand that we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. And it highlights the importance of not just taking the government's justifications at face value.
Right.
We need to constantly scrutinize these policies and actions.
Yeah.
Especially those that touch on fundamental rights like free speech to make sure that they're truly serving their stated purpose.
Right.
And not being used as a pretext for discrimination or censorship.
So this deep dive into Cornelius v. NAACP has been quite a journey. We've explored the arguments, the dissenting opinions, the remand.
It has.
And, you know, it was clearly a big deal back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But how much does a case about a charity drive from decades ago really impact us today?
That's a great question. And it might surprise you how relevant this case still is, especially in our digital age.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, think about all the online spaces we use these days, social media platforms, forums, websites.
Right.
Are those public forums in the traditional sense?
That's a good point. I never really thought about it that way. I mean, they're accessible to anyone.
Right.
But they're also run by private companies that can set their own rules.
Exactly. It's kind of a gray area, right?
It is.
And that's where Cornelius v. NAACP comes into play.
Okay.
Because it established this framework for analyzing free speech rights in these non-public settings, which is precisely the kind of space we're grappling with now in the online world.
So a case about a government charity drive is suddenly shaping how we think about free speech on the internet.
Yeah. Pretty fascinating, isn't it?
It is.
It really highlights this lasting impact of those Supreme Court decisions.
Mm.
I mean, the justices back then, they couldn't have predicted the internet.
Right.
But the principles they outlined about the government's power to regulate speech in all these different types of forums are proving to be incredibly relevant today.
It makes you wonder what those justices would think about all the complexities of online speech.
I know, right?
We're dealing with issues they couldn't have even imagined.
Like algorithms, misinformation, online harassment.
Right, it's a whole new ballgame.
It is, and while Cornelius v. NAACP provides a starting point, it also underscores the need for ongoing dialogue and debate about how to apply those principles in this digital realm.
Right.
So what constitutes a reasonable restriction on speech online?
Yeah.
How do we prevent viewpoint discrimination while also addressing, like, harmful content?
Right. Those are really tough questions.
They are.
No easy answers.
No easy answers.
So it's like this case, while super important, it also throws a spotlight on the fact that there's no one-size-fits-all solution when it comes to free speech.
Right.
The context matters. The platform matters.
It does.
And we need to be constantly, like, actively engaged in figuring out how to balance these competing interests.
Yeah.
Especially in this, like, rapidly changing landscape.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head.
Thanks.
Cornelius v. NAACP reminds us that free speech is not this static concept.
Right.
It's a dynamic and evolving area of law that requires that constant scrutiny and that thoughtful consideration.
Yeah.
You know, we can't just rely on those past precedents to navigate the challenges of today.
Well, this deep dive has been really eye-opening. I mean, it's not just about this single case from decades ago.
Right.
It's about understanding this ongoing tension between free speech and the government's power to regulate it.
Yeah.
And how that tension continues to play out in our lives, both online and offline.
Exactly. And if there's one takeaway from our deep dive today, it's this free speech is something we have to actively defend and engage with.
Yeah.
Even and perhaps especially when it's messy, complex, and uncomfortable.
Right.
It's a right worth fighting for, and understanding cases like Cornelius v. NAACP helps to equip us to participate in that fight in a really meaningful way.
I couldn't agree more. Well, thanks for joining us on this journey through the legal landscape. Until next time, keep those critical thinking caps on and never stop questioning the world around you.